call the meeting to order, and most of what we're going to do today is have Mark Schoenbaum go through the tentative report. As you all know, we have to give a report to the legislature at the end of this month with some recommendations in it, and then the commission will continue on after that for another 2 years. Why don't we start with Mark Schoenbaum going through the tentative proposal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Good morning, members. You do have, before you went out the end of last week, a draft of your 2014 report and recommendations. We'll walk through that. You've kind of taken quite a journey over the course of your meetings, and the report is an attempt to capture that as the kind of setting the stage for the recommendations at the end. It is definitely a draft. Interested to hear feedback, comments, typos, whatever you found there. The body of the document begins on page 5. Laying out this quote at the beginning there is one that you saw at your first meeting. I continue to find it a kind of a good reminder about the important role of state government in these issues, so stuck it in here. Moving on to your charge, towards the bottom of the page, talks both about this report and discusses, as Co-Chair Huntley reminded us, that your work will continue for another 2 years, recaps kind of the meeting schedule, and then recaps some of that overview discussion and content you went through in your first meeting or two. Just kind of big picture, as you started to think about these issues, you looked at this kind of supply-demand planning framework on page 6. You thought about the breadth of the and the length of the workforce development pipeline that is involved in health workforce and all other workforce issues. For the first time, at the bottom of page 7, in the context of this pipeline, the report discusses the bottlenecks that you started to hear about at each stage of the pipeline, and later on, particularly the clinical training bottleneck is a major section of the report. I'll keep moving. You also looked at your work in the context of the numerous other projects, related projects, going on this year, which are listed on page 8, and similar projects in the last couple of years listed on page 9. So that's the overview section. Now that's the introductory section. We then spent some time just looking at what is the healthcare workforce, and that starts on page 10. We looked at some national information. These figures here are more precise data from both MDH and DEED, almost 450,000 personnel in this industry, the largest occupations shown in that table, and the age dynamics, which are particularly influential in the primary care workforce, as shown at the bottom of page 10 and on to page 11, the primary care workforce, of course, being central to one of your charges. We heard from a number of sources and looked at some other data on the bottom of page 11 that show a range of estimates for physician supply or shortage in Minnesota, with kind of that one exception at the bottom that's getting a lot of criticism. Most projections believe Minnesota will have a physician shortage of some magnitude or other, so that's reflected in the report. At the top of page 12, there's also a discussion, again, from DEED data of shortages anticipated in other occupations. I think one that for some reason doesn't show up in the DEED data, but that we did hear about, which should probably be added here, are nursing assistants, certified nursing assistants, which we did hear about and continue to hear about. So I think that needs to be added. In addition to just kind of the raw numbers approach to shortages, we also looked at distribution issues, and the report includes a common indicator of geographic differences around the state, the health professional shortage areas and medically underserved areas, which are displayed on pages 12 and 13.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer, or Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. question I have for you, Mark. When I was looking at the different legends that go with these graphs, could you just explain a little bit, and we might need to include a little bit since I'm asking the question, about designated and not designated, what that means?
Sure. This process, there are many ways to look at shortage. This is one that's widely used, and to look at geographic differences. The federal government, the Department of HHS, establishes ratios, definitions of what makes a shortage in different occupations. And so starting with the mental health map on page 12, the indicator there is the number of people per psychiatrist, the number of people in the general population per psychiatrist in each of those regions, and those are the traditional kind of DHS mental health regions. And the ratio there, I believe, is 1 to 35,000. Moving on to dental, and I'm going to give my colleague here permission to correct me.
So 1 to 35,000, if you had that or better, you were not designated. If you had less than that ratio, you were designated.
Correct.
Yeah.
And we do that analysis at the health department. These designations are good for 3 years. So on a rotating basis, our staff looks at any changes in both the population, which doesn't change that, and the data doesn't change that often, and the number of healthcare providers. In dental, I believe it's 1 to 5,000. Got to phone a friend in the audience here. 1 to 5,000. Medically underserved areas is a slightly different indicator. It looks at both the ratio of physicians, and it looks at some demographic factors. It looks at the rate of premature and low birth weight babies. It looks at the proportion of the population 65 and older. It looks at the proportion of the population in poverty. It combines that with a physician ratio, and it comes up with this slightly different designation, but it's informative as well. And then in physicians, primary care physicians, I believe it's 1 to 3,500. 1 to 3,500. We can certainly add those definitions if you'd find that helpful, Senator Kiffmeyer.
I think it would be very, Mr. Chairman, I think it would be very, very helpful to do that, and also it appears as though there's a little room to kind of explain that. One other question I have for you. So then it does not include nurse practitioners, APRNs. It includes dentists, but not dental therapists or dental hygienists. It is just strictly on the level of either a medical doctor of any sort, no specialties. Those are the kinds of additional questions on that I would have.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kiffmeyer, it varies for each occupation.
Okay.
So in the mental health, it's just psychiatrists. In dental, and we can add these or maybe put them in a footnote or something.
Mm-hmm.
In dental, it does look at how many, it's either assistants or assistants and hygienists the dentist employs, and factors that in. These are federal methodologies that were developed, you know, in the early 1970s, so the dental therapists are by no means in there. And in primary care, it just looks at primary care physicians. There have been proposals, federal rulemakings over the years that would propose adding a look at nurse practitioners and physician assistants, but they've never been adopted. So it is what it is.
So, Mr. Chairman, the year that this methodology was put in place again was the 1970s. A lot has changed.
A lot has.
My concern, Mr. Chairman, is that we make decisions based upon this, and if it doesn't include, you know, the total picture, we just need to have a caveat and be careful. And if it's a federal methodology, I get that. But this is Minnesota, and so in here we can take those numbers, and maybe we should factor in a little bit more of our own accounting on top of that. I think might be helpful. So we have a true picture. Otherwise, you make decisions based upon not very clear information or complete, and we may go the wrong direction.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kiffmeyer, excellent point.
Gilman.
We'll certainly put all that additional explanation. Not sure how the pagination is going to go here. You know, not sure there's room for it in the body. We'll certainly put it in the appendix. No methodology is perfect. The reason this one is here is this: it is, even with its imperfections, it's still, I think, the most commonly used. It's used, you know, by dozens of analysts, dozens of federal programs. Every state uses it. It's actually, references are found in state law to this methodology. So, we'll put in all those caveats.
Senator Kloss.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Senator Kiffmeyer raises a good point. I'm just wondering if this should be a future recommendation to review that we could look at in the next 2 years as far as making some changes in the categories and who we're looking at as part of those groups.
Mr. Schoenbaum.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Klassen, another good point. You do have a recommendation on page 32, certainly number 3 and perhaps a couple of the others, that I think with a little additional language to capture this idea, you know, we could fit in there.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. You know,
Senator Lurie.
One way to approach whether your measure is good is also a type of gaps analysis type thing, and superimpose the maps. And if we have some data that says, you know, dental patients have waiting, you know, times of X, or, you know, look at the gaps analysis and see if our measuring tools are in sync with what patients experience. You know, if people looking for mental health help are having to wait extraordinary lengths of time or not getting the services they need. And it might actually show us some places where, even though we don't have the psychiatrists, we've built something else that works. You know, I mean, and so looking at a gaps analysis type approach and overlaying the maps could give us some really good insights into, number one, whether the measures need to be updated, and number two, whether we could actually think how to update them and think about alternative ways to approach the problem of shortages.
Senator Benson.
Suggestion.
Actually, my point has been made. We need to look at what's actually happening. And frankly, we have different scope of practice laws than the feds might even be considering if this is a federal or an ancient Minnesota model. Significant changes in licensing, scope of practice. If there are 3,500 primary care physicians, or if that ratio is off, but there's a significant population of advanced practice nurses, how does that get measured? And so I think Senator Claussen's point is very valid. We need to make sure this works for Minnesota. So I would actually call it out specifically and not just include it, mm-hmm. but call it out as changing the way we measure this.
Senator, Mr. Kallenbaum.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, so I suppose we may as well kind of jump around where we have recommendations thoughts as well. So are you suggesting we kind of add an additional recommendation in addition to number 3, or maybe add a 3A or something like that on page 32?
I'm on. I think this talks about reimbursement. I guess I'm looking at page 32. I'm not seeing a 3A. Do you mean under community paramedics?
Mr. Chairman, I think 33 under recommendations, where the first charge is to identify current and anticipated healthcare workforce shortages by both provider type and geography. I think under that area, that is 8 on page 33. Sorry. I think that, you know, a added charge under that, so there's charge 1, 2, 3, but I think what we want is a greater emphasis on it than just being included as a sub. So we have 4 charges there. I think you can number them however you wish, but having a specific charge that says evaluate current methodology of measuring shortages and have the make recommendations to the federal government, but I think an overlay of Minnesota, which includes more than the federal. That's too long for you, Mr. Schoenbaum, but
we'll work on it. And I apologize. The copy I printed out earlier today had different pages fell differently. So number 3 on page 33. Does that help, Senator Benson?
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Schoenbaum, continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Before
we were on page 14.
Move off that real
Senator
quick.
Senator Lurie.
No, there was a suggestion that we change the way we measure. I think we should test the way we measure first again, and because I think there may be a good defense, and not all of these measures may need to be changed, but we don't know. I mean, we can see that there's probably deficiencies, but we should test them and see how well they reflect what's actually happening on the street and change those.
Evaluate and consider changes?
Yeah. And test them with some way of figuring out what's happening on the street, if that's at all possible. We should look into that. That should be a recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and members, those are all excellent points. Do need to get more precise and more current. One test of a measure is whether, kind of from people that work in these areas, kind of it gets kind of the nod of the head that this kind of looks, as they know the world, like it makes sense. And even with its imperfections, the federal method does kind of get that nod of the head from most. who are familiar in their fields. But we'll, so I think keep the current and do better on top of it.
And if I could, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Just to, again, I always have to put the point on something, but all of the areas that are not designated metro areas, I think there are probably some shortages hidden in there in some of our most at-risk communities. And so not that we need to get into, you know, precinct by precinct or township by township designation, but this kind of gives us the impression that the metro's okay. And we might be missing some things in there. So just being aware as we go forward, this might not be, it might be a blunt instrument.
Yeah. We have included, you know, in other places in this report that we say rural and underserved populations in the metro area numerous times. And I agree with you. There are populations in Minneapolis that aren't getting the kind of health care they should get.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Benson, another good point. There are metro maps, which we left out for space considerations. We can certainly add them in. We'll do that. Continuing on page 14. The commission heard about diversity issues in the current health workforce. That's a discussion. There's a discussion of that on page 14. There's a lengthier discussion of primary care issues starting on page 14 and ending on page 16. And finally, in this section, the commission heard a presentation on the challenges, workforce challenges in the long-term care industry. And that's summarized on page 16.
I just my own comment on that one. I was really impressed with the fact that there are nursing homes that are closing beds because they can't hire people. Not because there's no demand for those beds, but they can't hire people to fill those positions. That was probably one of the more moving things that I've heard on this year.
Members, moving on to section 3 on page 17. You took a first look at state spending on health professions, education, and workforce development, looking at capturing in one place the spending from the higher ed divisions, the HHS divisions, the jobs and economic development divisions, and anything else we could find. This year, I think we definitely have to call that a start at what turned out to be a pretty complex exercise. There's a list on page 18, a table on page 18, kind of some of the programs by name and the issues, the workforce issues that they're intended to address. At the bottom of page 18, there's the preliminary total in bold there of $494 million per year in this category of spending identified so far in this initial exercise. And on page 19, a recap of the some of the discussions you heard about the Merck program and from employers about the work that they are doing. If you turn to page 42, you'll find the kind of the table of appropriations that the sum of which is reflected in the body of the report. Moving on, you spent a day on health professions education in Minnesota, starting on, and the discussion of that is starting on page 20. There's, I think, a kind of a big picture or recap of the occupations that are in the education pipeline, using data from the Office of Higher Education. Then there's a recap from each of the four higher education sectors that presented to the commission. University of Minnesota, Academic Health Center, some of their key points that they presented are in the narrative and in the tables on page 22. MNSCU, starting on page 23. Mayo, starting on page 24. Private colleges, on page 25. And career colleges, starting on page 26. You also heard from education leaders in the advanced practice registered nursing field and the physician assistant field on pages 27 and 28. Section 5 starts on page 28. This was a topic of a fair amount of your work, clinical training and residency challenges, also included in your charge. And there's a recap of some of what was presented during commission meetings on this subject. That continues on to page 31. Where the report, the body of the report starts to kind of wind down with a recap of the kind of the brief scope of practice, kind of best practices document that the committee received, and a discussion, I think, at the last meeting, perhaps, on emerging professions. So, again, that's kind of the narrative part of the recap of the commission work that got you to what comes next, the recommendations.
If I could just comment, I was at the Blue Ribbon meeting yesterday, and one of the members is from Mayo, and she made a very strong point. And something most of us, I don't think, have thought about is that a lot of the career colleges, and I'm not knocking career colleges, but they are training people for jobs that are needed in the healthcare industry. And all these positions need clinical training sites. And so they are competing for the same training sites, and it is the training sites for all these different professions is a major, major issue. And there aren't enough. I think our committee heard from one of the MNSCU colleges that's training PAs, and they have to find their own clinical sites. And if they can't, their graduation is delayed until they can do that. So this is, it's a big area, and I think not so much in this report, but in the next 2 years, this commission should really look at the training site problem.
Moving on to recommendations, and I think what I'll do here is probably highlight the changes from the draft that we worked from at the last meeting. And I think, again, you proposed recommendations as you went along. You've heard testimony on the first couple of drafts of recommendations. You've received written comments, all of which, you know, have been provided to you and are in your packets today. The co-chairs have done work to try and integrate all of that. That said, starting on page 33, what you'll find different in this version is under some of your charges, there's a little bit of introduction before the recommendations. Under charge one, about identifying current and anticipated workforce shortages. Recommendation three is new from last time, and we already talked about expanding that. Recommendation four is new. I think there was a fair amount of discussion about the rapid change in the healthcare system, and more of that this morning, but it's now reflected explicitly as a focus for the next 2 years. Moving on to charge two about evaluating the effectiveness. Again, there is some introductory language there. And other than a little tweak in the sentence on page 9, those remain as they were. Moving on to charge 3 about incentives. You heard from a variety of testifiers on the need for adding additional professions and specialties to the loan forgiveness program. So the second sentence in number 11 captures that and is new.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Under charge 3, where we have 13, 14, 15, I'm a little concerned because we make kind of a caveat word support for those. Actually, it's 13 through 16. Could we maybe consider something like the legislature should strongly consider the recommendation instead of a blanket support, because we don't have what those things are listed, and they may be incorporated elsewhere, but I'm just thinking that strongly consider the recommendations versus support.
I think that would be a good recommendation. In fact, Senator Claussen, what the mental health workforce is in the next week or so is coming up with theirs.
Yep, it's at the final draft right now, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. I misspoke. On 16, it does say should consider. So whatever that is, the same for 13, 14, 15.
Mr. Chairman.
Consistent then.
Senator Kiffmeyer, good point there. Just in terms of the kind of the word choice there, numbers 13, 14, and 15 originated in the legislature, so I used the strongest word there, and number 16 originated elsewhere. So I used a little less strong word there.
Strongly consider should cut that.
Yep, there you go. Continuing on, members, recommendation 19 is new. I think that came from a point of yours, Senator Kiffmeyer, and we also received it somewhere in the testimony. I don't remember exactly where. So that is new. And number 20 is tweaked a little. The last version just mentioned Minskew. So this captures all other education systems and calls for both an inventory and filling any gaps that inventory identifies.
Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, back on number 19 there, I think requiring nursing schools to consider other experience would maybe be a little heavy-handed. I think encourage them. I don't think we'd do much requiring of them to consider things in their admissions policies. I think that might be a little heavy-handed, personally. I don't know if...
Any other discussion on that particular item? So why don't you soften that up a little?
Will do.
Joan Baum.
Yeah. Will do.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I'm just...
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. What I've heard the most from nursing homes is that when you don't consider prior health care experience, part of our nursing home shortage is rooted in this number 19.
Yep.
So you can't talk about one thing, but I agree that requiring them their admissions, I understand that. But I think we do incentives and other kinds of language and other things that we can use to make it not that the legislature puts a mandate or requirement on their admissions. They're in that kind of a thing. But I just wanted to comment that from what I've heard, that the shortage in the nursing homes is, this has a big effect on them.
Number 21 has a change at the end of the last bullet there. This came from testimony and following the co-chair's discussion. That last sentence there is new. Number 24 is new. Again, following co-chair discussion, there's a recommendation that reflects the issues with these new occupations that we discussed at the last meeting. On to the fourth charge. There's again some introductory narrative there. In recommendation 26, the last sentence is new, including advanced practice nurses and physician assistant clinical placement funding. In recommendation 29, starting on the second line, there's also the addition of, it did say medical students and residents, and not, or it did say medical residents. It now says, it now adds advanced practice nursing, physician assistants, and mental health students into that need for increasing additional clinical training sites. Number 30, after the last meeting, we heard about some similar tax credit incentives in the three states listed on line two there, Montana, New Mexico, and Oregon, so they're added in. And those are the changes from last time.
Okay, are there any additional comments that members want to make on this? I think we have got Mr. Schoenbaum to make some adjustments to the language as we've commented, and I would like to know if there are other changes that people would like to see.
Chair.
Senator Wicklund.
I just want to comment. I did see a couple things, but they've already been covered and incorporated in the changes that he's indicated today. So I think that's good. There were a couple of the recommendations that where you've added sentences, I think, that are more inclusive, and that's good. So I don't have any additional recommendations.
Okay, and we could shift to public testimony for a little bit if there is somebody from the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers. I know they had car problems, so they may not be here. And is there anybody else that would like to give us public testimony?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
We have these other comments or things that are in our packet today from the Mayo Clinic and others, hospital associations, so on. Have their comments, recommendations, I know we had some last time as well, have they been addressed, incorporated from these? Because they took the time to do this very thoughtfully, so.
Yep. Some of these have. I know the Hospital Association had one complaint which we have not addressed. Mr. Schoenbaum, do you have any comments on those other letters?
Mr. Chairman, I don't. The co-chairs met, and I think at the time most of these comments had been received, and co-chairs, correct me if I misspeak here, but I believe your intent was to incorporate those that you thought had kind of wide acceptance and perhaps not some of the others. So.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, you know, in looking at the Hospital Association, it was, they didn't support number 23. They may support 130. I don't know exactly how many we have. But, and so I don't think it neutralizes the effect of the report. My main thing was that everybody who took the time to write to us that we considered whether we agreed or not, but that we consider them. There still is not legislation, and the legislative process certainly has lots of input. But I think the waiver one, is that a legislative action for a waiver, or is that not? If we make this recommendation, does the department just go ahead and do it?
It seems to me that, in my experience, the departments can ask for waivers, but ultimately it has to come back to the legislature for approval.
Well, then it will be considered again.
And alternatively, sometimes the legislature directs the departments to seek a waiver for a specific purpose. I mean, so it goes both ways. But at the end of the day, it does take both the administration, which is the single state agency in charge of what we do, requesting the waiver, and the coordination of the legislature to implement the state changes that need to make the two work in concert, but either can initiate the change.
Senator Kiffmeyer, you have a...
Well, Well, I just think they have another chance to influence whether the decision is made or not, is what I'm saying. If it's not in this, there, it is not the last opportunity for that sort of thing. But, Mr. Schoenbaum, otherwise, all of these things have been considered addressed at one point or another along the way, Mr. Chairman?
That is correct. We've looked at all of these, and we have discussed them, and many of the recommendations have been included in here.
Okay.
So, with that, is there a motion to approve the report as it will be changed by Mr. Schoenbaum under direction of the commission?
Mr. Chair, are we meeting next week? I thought it was on the agenda to do this.
We could meet next week. The question is, do we need to come back if we're pretty much in agreement with what's in the current?
Okay. I'm just thinking that for when you take a vote, the other members, I'm not eager to come back and travel down and do another meeting, but that if other members maybe might have had an opportunity to vote or do something when the agenda called for the vote next week. It's just a process thing to those who are not here. And I don't know if it matters if you don't have
it. Let those of us who are here this week vote, and if they want to come and vote next week.
Senator Lloyd, let's strike that from the record.
Okay. It's been moved that we approve the report as it will be amended by Mr. Schoenbaum. And any further discussion on that motion? Then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So the report is adopted. And I have one final thing to say. I've been in the legislature for 22 years, and I have heard from Mr. Schoenbaum many times. And I always thought he gave good reports and so on. But having worked with him in great detail on this project, I am absolutely amazed at his ability and the way he can get things done. He has done a fantastic job, and I think we all ought to give him a hand. Yeah. And with that, I think Senator Klein.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Maybe we could spend just a few minutes talking about next steps.
Okay.
The next steps for our report, and how do we activate some of the recommendations we've made? What are some steps that people would like to see us take the next in this process?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think the next steps are somewhat laid out in here, but I'll just voice again my disappointment that we took a vote without prior warning to the rest of our commission. And one of my recommendations, if you have a schedule and you're going to schedule things, then stick to it. Don't, because people have expectations and reasonable expectation, and then they're not here. But having said that, I will defer. Don't we have a work plan in our here right now, or is that not the case?
Well, ultimately, this report will go to the legislature, separately to the House and separately to the Senate, and they will have to consider it. I think it's important for the members of this commission to try to explain to the other members what this big problem is that we have, because I don't think they have a clue. I think we have now understood what the workforce problems are and are making some steps or recommendations to the legislature, but somebody's going to have to personally contact various members of the legislature, particularly those in the leadership role, and explain to them that the state has a big problem and that we need to start addressing it.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman from the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers is here.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee again.
Thank you. My name is Jonathan Watson with the Minnesota Association of Community Health Centers, and I just understood, I just walked in the room, I apologize, so I understood you did just pass everything, so we look forward to contributing our thoughts as this snakes its way through the legislative process, and thank you very much for drawing some attention to this issue. As you know, community health centers really face a challenge in having an adequate workforce to meet the low-income patients' needs that they have. So thank you very much, and we do have a letter that I think you all have that really summarizes our comments. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for coming here.
Sure.
I hope it was not your car that had trouble.
No, it was not my car. Unfortunately, it was Ginny's car, so we're carpooling it back to the office. Thank you.
So, any other discussion? I don't see any, so with that, the meeting is adjourned.